Yo, what's up? Welcome to Kinda Funny Games Daily for Friday, February 25th, 2022. I'm your host, Blessing. Addy Oye Jr. joining me is co-host of the Kinda Funny X-Cast, Gamertag Radio's Paris Lilly.
Blessing, thank you for having me back. It's actually been a while since I've been on Games Daily, so yeah, excited for this. A little under the weather. If I sound a little nasally, been battling a cold this week, but glad to be here.
Paris, no cold could ruin how your voice sounds, because of course you got the best voice here at Kinda Funny, and I would say in the games media side of the games industry. And so don't worry about sounding nasally, you sound great. Also, congratulations, I saw the tweet earlier this morning on the 17 years of Gamertag Radio. Big congrats on that. That's a long time.
Yeah, that's huge. So shout out to Danny Pena, aka Godfrey, Nano, his brother. They started it 17 years ago, Gamertag Radio, and it's still going strong. So just, you know, I'm just thankful that I was able to be a part of it, you know?
Yeah, absolutely incredible. Paris, how are you dealing with all the Elden Ring talk out there? We were talking a little bit before the show about, like, are we going to play, or are you going to play Elden Ring? Are you not going to play Elden Ring? Like, after seeing the reviews, seeing the 96 on Metacritic right now, maybe 97 because it keeps going back and forth, is Elden Ring something that you want to hop into?
So it's funny because, first of all, shout out to you and everyone else on Gamescast for the review. That was fantastic, which also leads into that and all the other reviews that I've seen has me very tempted to want to play Elden Ring, even though I know it's kind of not for me. I even kind of said that during the week. It's just not my thing, but I totally get it. I do have a PC copy, and I'm highly tempted to want to jump in. But there's just so many other things going on right now, time-wise. I just don't think I can invest the time right now. So I'll give it a shot at some point this year, but probably just not right away.
What are you investing time in right now? Are you still playing Horizon? Are you still playing? I know you're probably playing Destiny Witch Queen.
Yeah, I'm playing the Witch Queen.
Oh, yeah.
I'm absolutely loving it. This is probably the best Destiny has ever been.
Really?
From the campaign standpoint, from all just the system level features, RPG features, customizations that you're able to do now, the weapon crafting, everything that they've added in, this is the best that Destiny's ever been. And it goes to show. I mean, the game's been around since 2014, so they've probably just taken so many lessons learned over the years. But from just a story standpoint, narration standpoint, I mean, this is it. This is the best.
Wow. So then what would you say that this Destiny Witch Queen is approachable for newcomers? Because I know Greg and Mike have been trying it out a little bit. I've been out of the Destiny game since the launch of Destiny 2, right? Where I played like the 80 hours that month that it came out, did the Leviathan raid, fucking loved it, and then bounced off of it because I wasn't somebody who wanted to stay long term. Tried jumping back in with Forsaken because so many people were talking about, like, you know, the story of Forsaken and like the twists that are in it. And I was like, cool, let me do that. And I started playing it and I was like, man, this seems like a lot of work. This seems like a lot of investment. And I ended up not sticking around as much as I wanted to. Would you say Witch Queen is a jumping in point for people that are newcomers, or is it better if you've been on the Destiny journey for years and years?
It's a complicated answer. It's a yes or no thing. I would say if you're trying to understand the story of Destiny and just where everything has led up to this, this is chaos. You're not going to understand it at all. I would say from just a gameplay standpoint, they bring you in. Everyone has even playing field. You all come in at 1350 power. I think from that standpoint, this is a great jumping off point. You can get in and you can start playing the game, but you're not going to know what's going on. You're going to know, who's this character? Why is this character? What's their motivation? Why are we doing
Where's Kate Six?
Exactly.
Okay, cool. Well, that's good to know. I'm keeping an eye on it. I'm keeping an eye on specifically Snowmike Mike and Greg Miller to see how much they stick with it. And if they stick with it, I think I might jump in into it so that I can play with them, because that means that we're all coming in probably at similar levels. But enough about Destiny 2, the Witch Queen. Paris, we got a lot to talk about, because today's stories include more Project Spartacus details, DICE Awards winners, and it seems like we got some breaking news about Steam Deck reviews, so we're keeping an eye on that, because this is Kinda Funny Games Daily, each and every weekday at 10 a.m. live right here on twitch.tv/kindafunnygames. We run you through the nerdy news you need to know about. If you're watching live, you can correct us when we get stuff wrong by going to kindafunny.com/you'rewrong. If you don't want to watch live, you can watch later on youtube.com/kindafunnygames, roosterteeth.com, or you can listen later on podcast services around the globe by searching for Kinda Funny Games Daily. Remember, you can use Epic Creator Code Kinda Funny on all Epic Store and Epic in-game purchases like Rocket League and Fortnite to help support the channel. To be a part of the show, to patreon.com/KindaFunnyGames, where bronze members or above get to write in, and silver members or above get the show ad-free with the exclusive daily post show. Housekeeping for you, War for the Planet of the Apes in review is now up on youtube.com/KindaFunny and on podcast services around the globe. Thank you to our Patreon producers, Gordon McGuire, James Davis, at James Davis Makes, Pranksy, Manny the Bagel Boy Sanchez, and Blackjack. Today, brought to you by Purple Mattress and DoorDash, but we'll tell you about that later. For now, let's begin with what is, and forever will be, the Wolf Report. It's time for some news. We have four stories, plus maybe a breaking news story today.
Maybe Baker's Dozen.
That maybe breaking one being the Steam Deck reviews, which again, I am keeping an eye on as that shit comes out. But for now, Paris, let's start with our story number one. We have some more reported details on PlayStation's Project Spartacus. I am pulling from Jeffy Grubgrub at GamesBeat. Sony is looking to expand PlayStation Plus by introducing new features and by integrating elements from PlayStation Now. Bloomberg originally reported about these efforts, which Sony internally calls Spartacus, in December. But now GamesBeat can provide some more info on what these new offerings look like. Spartacus is an evolution of PlayStation Plus with three tiers. It currently calls those tiers Essential, Extra, and Premium, although those names could change between now and when the service launches. The subscription for these programs is monthly and starts at $10 and goes up to $16. And what do each of these tiers get you? Here's the current plan. At PS Plus Extra, or sorry, at PS Plus Essential, you're going to get monthly games at a price of $10. PS Plus Extra is going to get you monthly games plus a game catalog, and that's going to come at $13. And PS Plus Premium is going to come with monthly games, the game catalog, streaming, classic games, and then game trials at $16. Again, all these prices and names could change, but this is the general outline of what to expect from Spartacus. And these features should make PS Plus look much stronger in comparison to Xbox Game Pass. Paris, where are you at with PlayStation Project Spartacus? It seems like it might be around the corner. It seems like they're trying to go for Game Pass's throat. Do you think they have the stuff?
Yeah, this one's interesting because when I saw this yesterday, I was hesitant to want to like publicly speculate on it because I kind of don't think this is final. Just my personal opinion, just looking at the way that the tiers are set up. I get it that they're putting PlayStation Now, combining it with PlayStation Plus, and they're basically adding a backwards compatibility layer to it. It looks like with these classic games that they're talking about, it'll be interesting to see if are those downloadable or those are streamable or how that's going to work. I'm actually surprised that they're definitely pushing everything towards the top tier, obviously, right? Because, you know, that's most expensive. But I was hoping that we'd see the classic games at least in a lower tier. So I was surprised to see that if you want to play any classic PlayStation games on your PS5, you're going to have to get the most expensive one. There isn't a layer there. And it also looks like streaming is also tied to the highest tier as well. So I don't think this is final. I do think this will change because it just seems like that middle $13 tier, what's the point to it? Right. It almost seems like either you're just going to go with the basic one or you're going to get the most expensive one. I don't see anyone doing the middle one.
I feel like they have to at least add streaming to the middle one because that is like the basic stuff with a PS Now. Right, like, because it seems like the game catalog in the middle tier is like whatever downloadable games are on PS Now, at least for now. And I feel like just adding the streaming to that, being able to just stream essentially just the PS3 catalog would just be. I feel like just give us that, and then it feels like premium one to be able to download some of those games.
You're splitting up some of the worthwhile features into three different tiers in a way where I think this becomes way more attractive if it was the two tiers, where it was, All right, let's get rid of all the complications of it. Make PS Plus Essential being the lower tier that you already are paying for, right? Because it is literally just what PS Plus is right now. Let it be online, let it be monthly games, and then, you know, make it exciting, right? Add in the game catalog. And then at PS Plus Premium, maybe then add in the streaming classic games and game trials and call it a day, right? And game trials, like, I'm with you, Paris, that a lot of this seems like it is them figuring it out. And we are probably a month or so away from this being officially announced, and they're probably still trying to keep their ear to the ground, see what's working about Game Pass, see what works about other subscriptions, and assessing as the situation goes on. As it stands right now, I do feel like it is, there's a lot of weirdness in terms of where these things land. Why are game trials a PS Plus premium feature? Why am I paying for the highest price for game trials, right? When something like game trials, honestly, like that should be a either lowest tier feature or something that's just available, right? Like demos were a thing that were around during the PS3 and Xbox 360 era and have been around forever, right? But like, especially during that era, plenty of games had downloadable demos that you can just try out and, you know, those will help make you assess your purchase of like, cool, do I want to play, I'm trying to think of like an actual game that I demoed and it's hard. Oh, do I want to play Infamous 2? Because I played the demo of Infamous 2 like crazy. Do I want to actually like buy the full game of Infamous 2, right? Like that is what I would say is the purpose of a game trial. And, you know, when they say game trial here, I do see it less as a demo and more of like what you get with is it EA Play, where you do have like the 10 hours or so that you can play of a new EA game via that service. But even so, I do feel like splitting it up that way just kind of it lands weird in terms of the pricing structure of it. I do think it'd be better if it was a, hey, PS Plus Essential, PS Plus Premium, and you're getting the dope ass shit with Premium, but Essential, you're still getting a bang for your buck kind of deal.
Yeah, completely agree with you on that. And also say, just because you mentioned Game Pass at the top, you know, XCast got to get that in, right? Mm-hmm. But this definitely does not seem like a Game Pass competitor, in my opinion. This just seems like an enhanced PlayStation Plus that's going to have some legacy titles thrown in along with cloud streaming, to me, which is fine. That's fine. I don't think there's an issue that I've said for a while. I don't feel that PlayStation needs to compete with Xbox as far as Game Pass goes. I think them doing this makes a lot of sense for what PlayStation does. You know, look, I may not be a fan of $70 games, but the truth of the matter is PlayStation has been putting out some fantastic exclusive titles. So I don't think they need to leverage a subscription service day and date with their exclusive titles in their service. I think what they're doing, being able to allow us to finally access some of those classic PlayStation games through this service, makes a lot more sense to me. And I do see value in that.
Yeah. And I do think that this is, to some extent, kind of the antidote to where PlayStation is at right now, with raising the prices of the premium games to $70 and Xbox Game Pass being such a value for that audience, right? Like, I'm with you that I don't think PlayStation needs to or wants to compete directly with Game Pass, especially on the front of putting out your big first party games on that service, right? I think for Xbox that is the killer there, where they're able to put out first party games on Game Pass, and that is something that I don't think any other company can do on that level, right? Xbox has the commitment to do it. That is part of their core strategy. That is not part of the core PlayStation strategy, which is let's make really amazing premium AAA first party games that we're selling 20 million copies of, right, in the case of Horizon Zero Dawn and the numbers that just came out about that, and that are also selling the console, right, selling the box. I do think that what Game Pass does for Xbox, you know, outside of even just the big strategy conversation that we talk about, is the idea of value and the idea of how much are players in the audience paying for their games. And I do think the more and more Game Pass pushes that limit, the more and more it becomes a bit more visible on the PlayStation side of, man, video games are expensive and they're getting more expensive, and I don't feel like I'm getting as much value on the platform as I can. And I do think that this PlayStation Plus revamp, right, Project Spartacus, seems like a way to just add value, right? How do we compete in terms of value? And I think that is that, right? And that doesn't have to include first party games. That could include you being able to subscribe to PlayStation Plus Essential and then getting the monthly games, or getting PlayStation Plus Premium and getting a catalog of what probably is right now the PS Now games, right? But then also getting games like Shadow Warrior 3, which is going to drop day and date on PlayStation Now, right? And you imagine will roll into what Project Spartacus is. And you would guess that for the future, you would see more of those games coming out day and date on the PlayStation Plus service, as opposed to in the same way that you see it happen on something like a Game Pass. I think you're going to see that happen a little bit more and more on Project Spartacus.
Yep, completely agree. I would say if there was anything I would love to see them add to this that would make sense for what PlayStation does, kind of like you just mentioned, was it Shadow Warrior 3, that's a game that's going to be their day and date. I would love to see them do that more with indie titles, where they make deals with some of these indie studios and use that as a way to kind of spotlight those games and give people an sense of, hey, I'm already a subscriber, I get to check out this great indie game at the same time.
Exactly. And I do want to call out this person in chat, right? I'm Black Santa in chat says, yeah, because everyone's so hyped on Shadow Warrior 3. Would you say that everybody in the world was hyped on Nobody Saves the World, right? Like, the idea of it isn't to give you one game that's going to sell the entire service. The idea is to continue to build and build and build. So exactly. That way, you know, in 1 month, it isn't just Shadow Warrior 3. It is Shadow Warrior 3 plus Little Devil Inside plus whatever five other indie games that PlayStation can get on the service in 1 month in order to sell Project Spartacus. I think that's the end goal, and I think that's where the service starts to shine, if you can actually achieve that, which would be exciting.
Yeah, completely agree.
Hell yeah. Paris, let's move on to story number two. It Takes Two picks up Game of the Year at the 2022 DICE Awards. This is Danielle Partis at gamesindustry.biz. Haze Light's It Takes Two picked up the Game of the Year accolade at last night's 25th annual DICE Awards show. The co-op adventure also took home the award for Outstanding Achievement in Game Design. Another big winner for the night was Ratchet & Clank Rift Apart, which picked up four awards: Outstanding Achievement in Animation, Outstanding Achievement in Art Direction, Outstanding Technical Achievement, and Family Game of the Year. Other winners included Halo Infinite, which picked up Action Game of the Year and Online Game of the Year, and Deathloop, which took home Outstanding Achievement in Game Direction. Housemarque's Returnal took home two awards: Outstanding Achievement in Audio Design and Outstanding Achievement in Music Composition. The night also saw Xbox boss Phil Spencer receive the Lifetime Achievement Award, and NetherRealm Studios' Ed Boon was 2022's inductee into the DICE Hall of Fame. Paris, what are your thoughts?
All well-deserved, in my opinion. I mean, obviously, Takes Two also got Game of the Year at the Game Awards, so wasn't a surprise to see it get it here as well. I was happy to see Ratchet & Clank get a lot of love here, because I really loved that game last year. And then, again, you know, when we talk Returnal, to me, I don't think enough people, you know, have given Returnal the love
the flowers, that it man. Needs.
Yeah, exactly.
It's,
man,
because, it's ridiculous. I'm right there with you.
Yeah, it's such a fantastic game. I'm knocking on wood right now. I do hope Returnal winds up coming to the PC this year as well, because it definitely deserves a bigger audience of people to check that out. But yeah, everything. Yep, he always does. He always barks when I'm on camera. But yeah, everything that we saw here totally makes sense to me. Well deserved. I will say, I wish Psychonauts 2 got some love here too, but that's it. Other than that,
that's a good point. Psychonauts 2 is missing.
It hurts me, Bears. It hurts.
Yeah. It's just one of those things where, like, last year was so dense in terms of the amount of games that we got and the amount of games that were like that hit that level that really resonated with a lot of different groups of people. Where, like, I think I said the same thing about Returnal at the Game Awards, right? Whereas, like, other games saw more shine. And yeah, like, I didn't realize it until you mentioned that Psychonauts 2 wasn't listed here. I'm tapping over to gamesindustry.biz because they did have the full list of winners. And now that you mentioned Psychonauts 2, I'm like curious to see if it won anything. So I'm looking through.
I don't
right?
think it did.
No.
Game of the Year, It Takes Two. Outstanding Achievement in Game Design, It Takes Two. Game Direction, Deathloop. Animation, Ratchet. Art Direction, Ratchet. Technical, Ratchet. Family Game of the Year, Ratchet. Music Composition, Returnal. Hell yeah. I feel like Returnal's soundtrack doesn't get enough praise, but the Returnal soundtrack is fucking phenomenal, along with the audio design, which it also won at DICE. Achievement in Story, Marvel's Guardians of the Galaxy. Hell yeah for that. I would have gone for Life is Strange, but I'm not mad at it. Adventure Game of the Year, Marvel's Guardians of the Galaxy, which... I feel like the definition of adventure game changes every year, but hey, it's all good. Action Game of the Year, Halo Infinite. Online Game of the Year, Halo Infinite. Fighting, Guilty. Yeah, no Psychonauts 2 on here, right?
Like, just keep twisting in the knife, Bless.
Role-playing Game of the Year. Oh, man, not Psychonauts 2, huh? Final Fantasy 14. I wonder what got Sports Game of the Year. Is it going to be Psychonauts 2?
Correct me if I'm wrong.
It's Mario Golf Super Rush.
DICE is more of like more insider.
Yeah,
gamers.
it's voted on by developers and people that
and
work on the dev
really
side.
That's what really blows
my
mind. Is like Psychonauts 2 not winning anything at the Game Awards last year, like, didn't surprise me a lot because, you know, there are outlets that are sending in their votes, and they're, you know, there are always going to be those voices at those outlets that really love that game. But I don't think Psychonauts 2 like really grabbed outlets as a whole, so that didn't really surprise me. But like, I would have I would have assumed like other developers who played Psychonauts 2 would have been just like really in love with
like,
it.
Well, like blown away by it. Yeah. I do think I do think it's just the competitive nature of last year, right? Like I don't think it's an indictment on the reception of Psychonauts 2. I think it's more so like there's so much love to give between all of the games that came out last year that at each of these award shows is going to be something.
And, you know, half of the love we're going to give to Ratchet and Clank, you know? Yeah.
But that's a great game.
That's kind of the thing about all of it, right? None of the games listed. I didn't look at any of those and go, man, why did that get it? I go, okay, I understand. It's just Psychonauts 2 also deserved to be in there too. It's just unfortunate. But I would say to anybody watching or listening to this right now, if you've not played Psychonauts 2, do yourself a favor. Go check it out. It is a phenomenal game. Well deserving of your time. Hell absolutely. Yeah.
And Barry, I mean, don't speak too soon. I'm looking at the awards right now, right? And like right here, outstanding achievement in character. There's no way that doesn't go to Psychonauts. Oh, wait. No, oh, no, it's Lady Dimitrescu in Resident Evil Village.
Are you they gave it to her ahead. Again?
I should have read ahead.
Sitting? Oh, my
She's
God.
She's tall, Barrett. She's tall. What do you want from these guys?
We gotta stop giving awards to memes. Jesus Christ.
She's tall. She's hot.
From what I understand, she's barely in the game.
She was in the first fifth of the game, maybe third. First third of the game was Lady Dimitrescu. Q is great. Anyway, shout out to the winners of Dice. Also, shout out to Greg Miller, who, of course, co-hosted once again last night. Absolutely killed it. And also, like, shout out to It Takes Two, getting another big Game of the Year award, which is very impressive and very fantastic for that game. Also, shout out again to Phil Spencer. I think getting that Lifetime Achievement Award is well warranted. And then also Ed Boon. Like, big shout out to Ed Boon for getting inducted to the Hall of Fame. Because, like, when I think of growing up in the first video game personalities that I started to become aware of, specifically on the dev side, Ed Boon, for some reason, was one of the first ones that I can remember. And maybe that was just because he was visible. Maybe he put himself like in the forefront. I know like Noob Saibot is literally has his name in it. But Mortal Kombat, I know, means a lot to me. It means a lot to so many people. Caliph Adams fucking loves Mortal Kombat. And so much of our audience probably loves Mortal Kombat as well. But yeah, like big shout out there to Ed Boon, because you know I would have if you asked me, I would have assumed he was in there already for what he's done in the last, I guess, like what, three decades of being in the industry. Incredible. Paris, before we move on to our next news story, I want to let people know that they can go to patreon.com/kindoffunnygames where they can get the show ad free. And speaking of ads, let us tell you about our sponsors.
Your to-do list is absolutely bonkers between those meetings, errands, chores, and making sure you get some you time too. So make sure you get a little time to yourself with some help from DoorDash. DoorDash brings you what you want to eat right now, right to your door. Desperately craving late night snacks? Or have you forgot one key ingredient for dinner? Or maybe you just want to stock up for the week? Well, DoorDash has it all in one app. How do I know so much about DoorDash? Well, I'm Greg Miller and I use DoorDash way too much. If you were watching the Kinda Funny podcast when we were talking about a whole bunch of different stuff, Nick mentioned the ice cream place he really liked, and I said, "Where is there one around me?" And I said, "Yes, there is," and I ordered from it and I had it on the post show. I was eating ice cream on the post show, giving you a review of the ice cream, all because of DoorDash. For a limited time, our listeners can get 25% off and zero delivery fees on their first order of $15 or more when you download the DoorDash app and enter the code Kinda Funny. That's 25% off, up to a $10 value, and zero delivery fees in your first order when you download the DoorDash app in the App Store and enter the code Kinda Funny. Don't forget, that's code Kinda Funny for 25% off your first order with DoorDash. Subject to change. Terms apply. I don't care how soft or firm your mattress topper is. I don't even care how heavy your blanket is. There's only one thing you need to get a good night's sleep, and that's a good mattress. Get the only thing you truly need for a great night's sleep: a Purple mattress. Only Purple mattresses have the Gel Flex Grid. It's a super stretchy, ultra squishy material that adapts and flexes around pressure points and doesn't retain heat. It's amazingly supportive and cushioning in all the right places, no matter how you sleep. How do I know so much about it? Well, of course, you've known for years Joey's used a Purple mattress. You know Tim uses the Purple pillow. And now, the future class of video games, blessing Eddie Oye Jr., is sleeping on a Purple mattress. And he tells me all the time it keeps him cool, comfortable, and gives him a great night's sleep. Getting a great night's sleep starts with having a great mattress. Get a Purple mattress. Go to purple.com/kindoffunny and use the code kindoffunny. For a limited time, you can get 10% off any order of $200 or more. That's purple.com/kindoffunny. Code kindoffunny for 10% off your order of $200 or more. That's purple.com/kindoffunny. Promo code kindoffunny. Terms apply.
Paris, we're back with a breaking news You know, we got the Steam Deck review roundup for here for you. Let me tell you, I had to use that ad break to pull together a review roundup, and I'm very proud of myself. Let's start here with Seth Macy at IGN, who has a review in progress. It is currently unscored, but Seth Macy's verdict reads like this so far. The Steam Deck is a well-built piece of hardware that feels good to hold and play on. When you're playing a Valve-approved game, it's actually incredible to get this kind of performance out of a device so small and compact, even if the battery can be gone in a flash if you're not careful. But on the eve of its official launch, it isn't the smooth user experience I had hoped it would be. Aside from the frustrations I've come to expect and accept from PC gaming, the biggest problem I've encountered has been spotty compatibility with Steam OS. The dream of being able to play everything in your library on the go is a long way from being realized, and not being able to use Windows just yet makes a lot of those problems temporarily insurmountable. Plus, it means I haven't been able to run our usual PC benchmarking tools. So it's impossible to land on a judgment right now, because I literally don't know what the Steam Deck will be able to do by the time the first retail unit arrives at a paying customer's home. But that won't last for long, so check back soon for the final review and score. And then I have this other review I'm going to pull from The Verge. It is written by Sean Hollister, and the review is titled Steam Deck Review, It's Not Ready. They gave it a 6.5 out of 10. I didn't necessarily have enough time to like pull a verdict paragraph, because they don't have a verdict paragraph. What they do have is a nice list of bullet points of good stuff and bad stuff. The good stuff reads like this. All right, good stuff. Powerful, high-quality hardware at an unheard of price. Infinitely customizable controls makes decades of games playable. It easily lets you balance performance and battery drain, suspend and resume games, and then doubles as a full Linux PC. And then for bad stuff, unfinished, buggy software, noisy fan that almost never stops whining, some of the most popular games still don't work, and then 2 hours or less of battery life at the highest fidelity. Paris, both me and you have a Steam Deck on deck, right? That we've like right. Pre-ordered, essentially. We put like what, the $5 down so we can wait for our spot in line to do it. Barry, I think you mention you did that too?
Yeah, back in like December. So it was like a few months after pre-orders went up.
As these reviews are coming out, Paris, where are you at? Are you excited about your money down? Are you excited to get a Steam Deck in to try it out?
I'm a new gadget guy, so I still want one, despite like what The Verge is saying. What concerns me is the battery life. I you know, the buggy software, you know, not having enough games, you know, compatible yet. They'll get that resolved. I'm not too concerned about that. But it sounds like the battery life and the fact that the fan is so noisy, that does concern me a little bit. So much so that maybe it is a good thing I'm not getting one day one. Maybe I can kind of sit back for a few months while I wait on mine to come in and kind of see how it is out in the real world, you know, when it gets into consumers' hands. But I mean, overall, the concept of the Steam Deck truly excites me, because I do see it getting to a place where my entire Steam library is going to be with me on the go. And that's just like the dream, right? To be able to do that. So we'll see. And the fact that it is basically a Linux PC that's fully customizable, you could eventually get Windows on it, do some other things with it. I do see this being a useful piece of hardware that's just going to spur innovation even more, because, you know, if Valve's doing this now, someone right now is trying to copy this and is going to do it as well. So I'm excited for it. And, you know, we'll just see how it plays out here over the next few weeks.
And to pull in other things, because I know this is breaking, and Bless, I know you're only able to pull as many as you can.
I'm sitting on the Gamespeed one right now, if that's the one you're about to go to. I'll bring Jeff Grubb from Gamespeed, who has a very glowing review and says it's his favorite gaming PC ever made. I'm trying to scroll down to see where if I can get like a good excerpt here. Oh, this seems good. In the gaming community, we get really hung up on boxes. We like our imposing desktop PCs and new generation consoles so much that we often forget that they exist to serve us games. What the Nintendo Switch emphasized is that serving people games wherever they are is probably more important than things like graphics and HDR. Valve has taken that concept and brought it to the wide open world of PC gaming, and the Steam Deck is a success because it emphasizes that experience. When I first got the Deck, I was planning on installing Windows. Now I don't know if I ever will, because Steam OS is so fantastic at putting my Steam games front and center, and it's also built to give me specific granular control over how those games and the system performs so that I can get the most out of the device. A handheld is more relational than a console. It's something you hold and something you build a bond with. And Valve has lived up to its end of that relationship. It has proven that it cares deeply about having the best experience possible, and that in turn enables players to build this intimacy with games that handhelds are famous for. I love my powerful desktop and my new consoles, but I would give them up to keep the Steam Deck experience in my hands, which, wow, that is a very glowing review. Paris, to bounce off of what you're saying, right? Like, the concept of the Steam Deck excites me. The promise of the Steam Deck excites me. I like the idea of being able to play these games on the go. And what Jeff Grubb is describing here in terms of not thinking about it as a PC like tech experience, and more so thinking about it in terms of like an intimate, like, hey, this is a cool piece of tech that I can play in a way that I'll play my Switch, which is, you know, I'm in bed playing it. Like, it is more personal. I'm not looking for fidelity out of it. I'm just looking for that, for an additional way to experience the games I love. I do appreciate that idea of it. I know for me now, seeing those reviews, especially the Verge one, right, giving it 6.5, I'm also in the place where, like, I'm excited that I'm not in that first wave. Right. You know, like, it reminds me of pretty much any hardware launch where it is, hey, if you're in that first wave, you're going to get the bugs, you're going to get the shit, you're going to get all the stuff that are wrong with the hardware, right? People joke and say that, oh yeah, you're basically beta testing at that point, right? And I think the idea of being able to wait for the first wave to go out, being able to come in at year two and then pick up something that might be more refined and updated and might be able to run more games and have all the features that you'd want it to have, that for me excites me, right? I'm excited to see what the Steam Deck essentially becomes.
Yeah, completely agree. That's what I'm saying. I'm not concerned about the early bugs, because like you said, that's pretty much every hardware launch. There's always going to be some bugs at the beginning, and they're going to continue to get those games to be compatible with SteamOS, with Proton, and get them migrated over. So my games library will eventually be there. It'll eventually be a smooth experience. So yeah, early days, first couple months might be a little rough, but I'm not in the first couple of months anyway, so I don't care, so it doesn't affect me. So by the time I get it, hopefully it'll be great.
When you get your hands on the Steam Deck, how much do you think you're going to use it? Like, do you think it's going to be one of your main platforms?
Well, it's interesting because, you know, I work from home now, so I'm not on the go commuting. So I honestly don't know. I'm kind of like with what Grubby Grub is saying. I love the concept of it, and I just love new tech and what I can do. So, I mean, obviously I'm going to put it through various scenarios, but my daily use of it, I mean, I'm here at home. I already have my PC. I have my consoles, but I still want one because I'm an adult and I want new things. So we'll see. The one thing about it not getting it day one is I get to kind of sit back and see what other people are doing with it and how other people are using it and engaging with it. What interesting customizable thing may happen with it. So by the time I have it, I'll kind of have an idea of how most people use it. But yeah, definitely when I'm on the go, I see it being in my backpack with me wherever I go, because obviously I have time to kill. I can whip it out and play a game on it. And yeah, you know, that's the whole point of it.
I think it's real fun and interesting. You mentioned it being on the go primarily as like the reason why you'd want to use it. And that's something I've never even thought about with the Steam Deck, which I know is crazy, because like when you think of handheld, you think of portable, you think of the fact of going on the bus, you know, going on a plane ride, you know, traveling and being able to play games in your hotel. I that was my use case for my Vita when I played my Vita way more, right? Every single day on the bus in like 2016, I was playing Persona 4 Golden back and forth. And it was the best time of my life just going on bus rides playing Persona 4 Golden. With the Steam Deck, I've always thought of it as like I'm going to play this at home on the couch in bed. Like, and I think it's the idea of it being a dedicated gaming device as opposed to my PC, where when I sit at my desk to like turn on my computer, I'm thinking about work, right? I'm thinking about sitting down podcasting with you guys, right? I'm thinking about doing taxes and shit, right? All the stuff that Greg Miller makes fun of. But like I me not having my PC being a specific dedicated gaming device for some reason kind of takes the fun out of it, where like whenever Greg or anybody comes to me and was like, hey, we got codes for a game, do you want PC or PS5? I'm like, oh, give me PS5, because like
get me away from this desk as much as
possible. I like the idea of my Steam Deck being something that is going to be cool. I have that PC library and I'm going to be able to play my PC games, but in a way that I don't feel like I am going through the motions of like booting up a PC and sitting at a desk and like turning on the lights or doing all whatever I need to do to set the tone of playing on my PC. I don't need to do all that if I just have my Steam Deck, which I know that setup changes from person to person, right? I know plenty of people have a PC setup where it's like, no, I just sit on my couch and turn it on. But I do like the idea of the Steam Deck being a different way for me to play that is going to be more comparable to me playing my Switch. So I'm excited for it. Paris, next news story. Story number three. Switch's latest N64 update finally fixes Zelda's Water Temple Room. This is Chris Scullion at Video Games Chronicle. The Nintendo 64 service on Nintendo Switch Online has been updated, adding a number of fixes to its emulation. The most notable of these, as tweeted by Switch data miner Oatmeal Dome, is that the Water Temple Room in The Legend of Zelda Ocarina of Time, used by many as the prime example of Switch Online's N64 inaccuracies, finally looks like it did in the original game. When the N64 service launched on Switch Online, players quickly pointed out that the room looked nothing like it did on console, with no water transparency and no fog. An update in January fixed the water, but there was still no fog. This new update appears to have reinstated the fog, finally making the scene more accurate to its original design. Other users have taken to Twitter to point out more fixes introduced in the new update. A bug that was causing Paper Mario to crash and wipe save data if Mario died while partnered with Watt has been fixed, according to GamingBoy256. I love these usernames.
Yeah.
However, some issues still need to be addressed. As Yakumono points out, Dr. Mario 64 still has the wrong transition effects, and the Inviso boss in Yoshi's Story still shows an incorrect effect when it turns invisible. Plenty of issues still remain, however, including the Switch Online app's apparent lack of support for the controller pack, the N64's memory card. Paris, are you someone that's been trying out the Switch Online N64 stuff?
No, I have not. So actually, when this news story came up, it's interesting to see that, you know, they're obviously going in and continuing to iterate and fix issues as it goes along. But I fully admit, no, I've really not deep dived in any of the N64 stuff on the Switch Online.
Yeah, I'm somebody who has, and week one, when I was diving in hard, I found it to be a bummer, just in terms of how things ran, right? Like, you know, there's the stuff that I think we could have already assumed in terms of controls not being able to be remapped and, like, the issues that are already existed in that online service. But, yeah, like, the emulation just wasn't there, right? It seems like if you're somebody who pays attention to emulation and wants to play the best versions of these games, there are other options still available for you that would get you better performance out of these games than what Nintendo's offering. And, like, that shouldn't be the case because you're Nintendo, right? Like, you have the Switch, you have these games, you have the properties, you should be able to deliver this stuff to us in a way that feels like we're playing the best versions of these games. And so, like, for me, that was something that was disappointing, even though I still did love the novelty of being able to play Mario Kart 64 on the go, and I still played so much of these games. But I love that they're updating it, right? I love that they seem to be getting better. It seems like it's still a continual climb to get things to where they need to be. But it is another one in the checklist of weird Nintendo decisions to launch the N64 online service in this way. And so, yeah, it's wild. It's wild, yeah. Paris.
Nintendo is Nintendo. They're always going to do what they want to do when they want to do it, and we're going to continue to pay for it and just accept it and like it. But that's just how it works.
It's how it works. And also, I will say that now that we are months past the launch of it, right, of the Switch expansion pack, I do feel better, a little bit better, about the money spent knowing that I'm going to get the Mario Kart DLC. I think that, yeah, plus them adding a few more games to N64 Online has, like, smoothened that out a little bit. I'm still, like, I still want more bang for my buck, but I feel confident that I'm going to get that bang for my buck. Maybe at the end of 2022, maybe in 2023. We're slowly
getting there, right, Bless? Like, we just got Earthbound. Yeah. We just got Majora's Mask, I believe.
Majora's Mask is huge.
And so, yeah, I actually finally dropped the money for the expansion pack, I think, like, last week or 2 weeks ago, just because it's one of those things of, like, yeah, like, I want more Mario Kart. I want to play N64 games. I played a little bit of Mario Kart 64. Earlier this week, and it was a fun nostalgic trip. So I think, yeah, slowly, but in the classic Nintendo way, you know, at first it's gonna be like, why? And then
it's like, what the fuck are you doing?
Next couple of years, it'll be like, all right, like, this is cool. I'm glad that I'm spending
money. They kind of settle into it. Yeah, yeah. Like, Nathan, the viewer in chat here, says the Animal Crossing DLC is worth it. And I think that is the thing, where I'm not somebody who plays Animal Crossing. That's not my type of game. But if you did play Animal Crossing, if you're Gary Whitta, and you have a family of people that play Animal Crossing, you pay for the family plan, and that's a great deal, right? Yeah. But I'm like a single, I'm on a single plan. I don't play Animal Crossing. And so for me, Mario Kart DLC plus the N64 games makes it a bit more worth it. But if you happen to be somebody who's a Nintendo diehard and is going to play the N64 stuff and also does play Animal Crossing and Mario Kart 8 Deluxe, which is probably most people with a Switch, honestly, like, those games have sold to like Animal Crossing hit over 30 million. Mario Kart 8 Deluxe is still the best selling game on the Switch. For those games to have both their DLC packs tied to Nintendo Switch Online Expansion Pack, that is a good deal for a lot of people. And so like I totally understand what they're trying to do, but I think it is we're going to climb toward a place where it feels great for a greater amount of people as opposed to that specific group of people.
I totally forgot about the Animal Crossing DLC. That'll be fun for Alyssa because she's super into it, and we have the family plan. And spring break's coming up, I think, in a month or two, so that might be her life for her break.
For a second, I forgot that Alyssa got spring break off, and you got me excited because I was like, oh, shit, do we get spring break off? We don't get spring break off. No, that's not a thing. Sadly. Not. Story number four, we got a PC PSA for you. Elden Ring is working out its PC performance issues. I'm pulling from Ari Notice at Kotaku. On PC, Elden Ring has a number of issues that will affect all hardware configurations on all graphical settings presets. That is what Digital Foundry says. Back to Kotaku, when you encounter new enemies in regions, you can run into micro stutters of 250 milliseconds. Those are in addition to stark drops when you're covering a lot of ground through the open world, in some instances reportedly dipping from 60 FPS to 40 FPS multiple times per minute. Washington Post reporter Gene Park, who's played 40 hours of Elden Ring for Review in Progress, described its PC performance as rough initially, and recommended that you play on a next-gen console. Bloomberg's Jason Schreier, who clocked 35 hours, made note of a handful of crashes, though said he still preferred playing the PC version over the PS5 one. Voice actor Yang Ye said he played Elden Ring with the day one patch installed, yet still experienced stutters and bizarre slowdowns on PC. Publisher Bandai Namco addressed Elden Ring's PC issues in a blog post this morning, saying a patch will address everything from frame rate issues to mouse sensitivity, plus a rare problem where an easy anti-cheat fails to launch. Bandai Namco did not specify a date or timeline for the patch. I figured that would be a good PC PSA. If you're a PC player out there, be aware that these issues are happening, but it seems like you're going to get a fix at some point. And coming off of that, too, one I'll bring in while we're here. This broke yesterday, when it didn't even break, this is a thing that's kind of been ongoing, but Elden Ring's PC performance issues have led to a 40% negative review count on Steam, and most of those reviews saying that people are experiencing PC performance issues. So be aware, if you're playing Elden Ring on PC, if you're experiencing issues, you're not alone.
So two things on that. First off, I love that Young Ye is now known as a voice actor because he's been doing an amazing job with that. Second part is, I get the issues that it's having on Steam, not on Steam, but just on PC as far as, with all the stuttering and everything that's going on, which may have led to some of the negative reviews, obviously, though they'll get it fixed. But have you seen the concurrence on Steam? Regardless of that, like I said, I'm not playing it right now, but regardless of that, it was over 700,000 last time I saw.
So from Daniel Ahmad, right, some day one stats for Elden Ring: 765k peak concurrent players on Steam. Wow. That is versus 130k for Dark Souls 3 and 125k for Sekiro. It is the number seven PCCU of all time, which I actually don't know what PCCU stands for. Pairs. I don't know if you know, as somebody who plays more PC than me.
No.
Chat, kindoffunny.com/you're wrong. Let us know what that means. Maybe PC concurrent users? That sounds right.
And
then 910k peak concurrent viewers on Twitch. That is versus 280k for Sekiro and 276k for Dark Souls 3. And it's the number 16 game PCCU of all time for Twitch Tracker, which I'm going to assume peak concurrent users, unless somebody can prove me wrong.
Chat's confirming your suspicions.
You were saying I'm right?
Yeah.
Concurrent? Okay, thank you so much for that. Elden Ring is dominating right now. Absolutely. And that follows what we've been talking about in terms of Elden Ring kind of being that breakout hit for From Software, which, breakout hit in a way that Sekiro was Game Awards Game of the Year in 2019. People fucking love Dark Souls, right? We're not talking about an indie studio here, but we are talking about a studio that speaks to a hardcore audience, and a very specific audience. And it seems like Elden Ring is going to really expand that audience, which I think is to be expected. But the fact that it's actually doing it, I think, is really impressive and something to look out for, because it means that we're going to have a lot more Souls players and a lot more From Software games that are able to exist in the same way and thrive and be bestsellers and be Game of the Year contenders in the same way. Paris, if you play, at the beginning of the show, I asked you if you're going to play Elden Ring, right? And you said you're going to give it a try, right?
Yes.
If you had a guess, how many hours do you think you're going to put in Elden Ring? as somebody who's not that type of player?
I mean, because I would want to give it a fair shot. It seems like, just based on these reviews, I need to at least give it about 40 hours. No.
Oh, you're going to give it 40 hours, you think?
Yeah.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah.
But that's also why I'm saying I know I need that to cut out that amount of time. So that's why I'm not jumping in right now, because obviously it's review season and
I thought you were going to say like what I usually do is like 5 to 10 hours.
Yeah, I was expecting like, oh, yeah, I'll give it a 5 hour shot. If I'm into it, I'll continue. If I'm not, I'll bounce out. 40 hours is a good commitment.
I mean, I love open world games, so it's not even the thing of that I can't get into that genre. And obviously, I understand the Souls concept, and I like playing games like Returnal and, you know, things like that, you know, roguelike games. So I think I can get into it. It's just, I know I've never really given that type of game, a Souls game, a chance. And I see it needed a big time commitment. So I was like, this isn't going to be for me right now. I'll try later. I feel like we'll get into the summertime and there'll be a lull in games. And then I'm like, all right, let me jump into Elden Ring and commit some time to it.
Yeah, I'm currently about 33 hours into Elden Ring. And it's one of those ones where even though you say 40 hours, even though that sounds like a lot, Elden Ring, I think, is an easier game to kind of go down that rabbit hole and put in that many hours into. Like, I saw Andy posted his like Steam screenshot of like 90 hours. And I think I could see myself potentially getting there too, with how much the world is just made for you to just exist in it and get lost. It's funny because, you know, a big talking point for Elden Ring is how vast and wide and huge and long the game is, right? But like a month ago when Dying Light 2 was like, hey, you know, it's going to take 500 hours or 90 hours to like complete the game, people were freaking out about that in a way where I was like, damn, like, you guys are kind of going hard in Dying Light 2. But yeah. I think that also comes with the kind of game, like the kind of games that demand that kind of time for you, where Dying Light 2, I put in my, I want to say like 30 hours overall, maybe like 27 hours overall, and I felt done with it, right? I enjoyed that time, and like in a world where there wasn't anything else to play right now, I'd probably put in more time into Dying Light 2. But with Elden Ring, as I've been playing it, it kind of just has that like, nah man, just get lost in it kind of feel, where you just want to keep exploring, you want to keep chasing points of interest, you want to, there's always something that's kind of pulling your attention that you kind of want to go and chase down. And for me, I'm somebody who I tend to not put like 50 hours into a single player game. If I'm putting in that much or that many hours to a game, usually it's something multiplayer, usually it's something like Apex, where I'm just like playing with friends and time's getting lost that way. For a single player game, it's either Persona or it's like, it's something that really gets me in that way with the gameplay loop. And Elden Ring seems like it's one of those that the gameplay loop is really pulling me in a way where I'm just, I could see myself losing 60 more hours into it.
Oh, that's great. Like as an example, like The Witcher 3, I've easily put in probably 500 hours into that game, right? Mm-hmm. So when I think of giving up 40 hours to this type of game, which is another open world and like everything that you're describing, I think it's worth the time commitment. So I'm willing to do that.
Paris, I'm excited to see if you hit that 40 hour mark in Elden Ring, but that is just so far away. If I wanted what's coming out to Mom and Drop shops today, where would I look?
The official list of upcoming software across each and every platform as listed by the Kinda Funny Games Daily Show host each and every weekday.
Out today, we got Grid Legends for PS5, PS4, Xbox Series X, Xbox One, and PC, Tormented Souls for PS4 and Xbox One, Moto Rotor MC for PS5, PS4, Xbox Series X, Xbox One, and Switch. Oh, I always mispronounce this one. Atelier or Atlier? It's one of those two, and I always flip it. Atelier Sophie 2 for The Alchemist of the Mysterious Dream. Goddamn, what a title. For PS4, Switch, and PC. Elden Ring for PS5, PS4, Xbox Series X, Xbox One, and PC. Tux and Funny for Xbox One. People in chat are saying Atelier. Slipcrate here says Atelier. Atelier.
Atelier.
Atlier.
Atelier.
Yeah.
Oh, everybody in chat is saying something different. Atelier. Atelier. Is it French?
Yeah, you gotta like put the
if it's French, then I know the pronunciation, because it's atelier, you know, in that case. Yeah. Atelier. Okay, we got it. Where was I? Figment 2 for Creed Valley for Switch. Aeternum Quest for Switch. Ammo Pigs Cocked and Loaded for Switch. One Guy Gun for Switch. Plunderer's Adventures for Switch. And then A Perfect Day for PC. New dates for you. Xbox Games with Gold for March 2022 have been revealed. Next month, you're getting The Flame in the Flood, Street Power Soccer, Sacred 2, Fallen Angel, and SpongeBob's Truth or Square. Paris, as a host of the Kinda Funny X-Cast, does that do it for you? Xbox Games with Gold, March 2022?
Games with Gold at this point is what it is. You know, I don't put any stock.
That was me baiting you, if I'm being honest. Yeah, like, I knew the answer.
Yeah, I know. I mean, look, they're in the Games Pass business these days, so Games with Gold. Let me say this. I'm actually shocked that they still have Xbox Live Gold, to be honest with you. You would think at this mm-hmm. point they would just bundle it, just get rid of that and just go, hey, go get Game Pass. And everything that you would get would be through Game Pass. So it's surprising that it's even still around at this point.
Now, Barrett, you have pulled up here gameplay for SpongeBob's Truth or Square, and it looks like Battle for Bikini Bottom. Barrett, was this your jam when it came out?
No, this game isn't great. Really? No SpongeBob game, I think, is really, like, they've tried to do Battle for Bikini Bottom. They've tried to capture that, and I don't think any of them have really hit that high since. We'll see with the new, spiritual successor to Battle for Bikini Bottom that they're working on that they announced last year. We'll see if they can.
God, I forgot that was happening.
I know. Yeah. I'm so stoked for that game. But yeah, this game wasn't it.
Oh, wow. Yeah, like, Paris, I'm with you in terms of, like, Games with Gold. I feel like month after month, I'll see the list and I'm like, do people even know this exists still? Like, this feels like such a bygone thing of, dude, just get rid of it. You have Game Pass, right? That speaks to so many people. It seems like it's time to, like, just double down on that and get rid of it. But maybe they're trying to fulfill something, you know, maybe they're trying to buy time. Maybe they're waiting for some kind of big announcement or revamp for Xbox Gold / Game Pass Ultimate. You know, maybe they're waiting for something.
Yeah, maybe so. But it also kind of, this highlights the difference between that and, like, PlayStation Plus, where PlayStation Plus, maybe not every month there's a game there that I don't already own or something that excites me. But, you know, a lot of times when I look at that list and I go, ooh, let me make sure I grab that. Let me make sure I download that. I'll check that out. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
Whereas Gold, I don't think I've said that in probably 5 years, if not longer.
Yeah, like PS Plus for next month, that was announced a few days ago, and it looked great, right? Like, it is. I'm trying to find, because I know Ghost of Tsushima Legends is on there. Ark Survival Evolved is on there. Team Sonic Racing and Ghost Runner. That's a fucking fantastic month. And it goes back to that original news story that we were talking about, right? With, like, Project Spartacus and the difference in strategy for PlayStation and Xbox, where Game Pass is doing it right now for Xbox, right? Like, that is the thing to lean into. Where for PlayStation, they still see that value in PS Plus, and PS Plus really being the subscription service that they push. And so for them, yeah, it makes sense to support it in that way and go hard or go home with it. And so it's not surprising, but it is also, like, when you read the listing, it's like, goddamn, Street Power Soccer? Is that where we're at? All right, I guess, you know. We do have a deal of the day for you. This was tweeted out this morning by 11-Bit Studios. For the next 7 days, all profits from this war of mine and all its DLCs on all stores and all platforms will go to a special fund. A week from now, this money will go to the Ukrainian Red Cross to directly support victims of war in Ukraine. And so if you're looking for ways to support, go check that out. Buy this War of Mine. All that money is going to go to support Ukraine. And if you've not played this War of Mine, very fascinating game, of course. It's like a survival game that takes a very interesting approach into conveying the toll of war. Like, it is a very kind of, it's a heart-wrenching game. I was only able to play it for probably like 4-ish hours before I was like, damn, this is really fucking, like, it's getting to me. Like, it's an emotional game. So if you're looking for something like that, check that out. And at the very least, you know, give them the buck to help support the Ukrainian Red Cross. Paris, now it's time to squat up. Of course, people can write in to patreon.com/kindoffunnygames, where they can get the show ad-free, they can get us their questions, and they can also get us their squad ups, just like Theo John did. Theo John writes in and says, hello, KFGD crew. I hope you guys are doing well. Late last year, I sent in a haiku in review for Spider-Man No Way Home, and seeing how much y'all enjoyed it got me thinking to get back into writing. I wrote an article on WordPress that went viral in 2015, and I hadn't written another until now. I've become a parent since the last time I took pen to paper and wrote a fun article titled Surviving Parenthood that I published today. I was hoping to share it with you guys and any other parents that are also kind of funny best friends. My link is The Legend of Theo. .wordpress.com. That is The Legend of Theo.wordpress.com. Hope you guys enjoy it. Love you guys. Love this community. And thank you, Theo. That sounds really cool. Thank you for writing in.
Absolutely.
Now it's time for kindoffunny.com/you're wrong, where you write in and listen to what we got wrong as we got it wrong so we can correct it. For those watching later on YouTube and listening later on podcast services around the globe, Charles Jacobson writes in and says, we had a missed title. Babylon's Falls demo hit PSN today. So if you're not busy with other games, .. That's the thing. If Elden Ring's not your thing and you feel like playing the demo to Babylon's Fall, boom, there you go. There you go, everybody. Paris, have you been paying attention to Babylon's Fall? Does that speak to you at all?
No, that's not really my bag, so I haven't been keeping too much tabs on it.
It's one that bums me out so much because it should be my bag. Right. It was announced and it was my bag because it's Platinum Games. I believe it was the same team as Nier Automata. Game looked really cool, looked really promising, and then reemerged years later looking like a completely different game, and they said it was a games as a service, and it seems like people aren't liking it. The preview impressions are not great out there, and it bums me out because I fucking love that studio and I wanted to love this game. But hey, you know, who knows? Maybe it comes out day one and turns out we were all wrong. It turns out it slaps, but we'll have to see. Of course, it's Friday. It's the end of the week, so I can tell you about next week's hosts. Next week looks like this. On Monday for KFGD, we have Question Marks and Tim. Tuesday, we have Greg and Gary Witta. Wednesday, it's me and Andy. Thursday, it's Greg and Tim. Then on Friday, it's Greg and me. If you're watching this live on Twitch right now, after this is Mike and Barrett playing some God of War. If you want to catch that stream later, you can subscribe to youtube.com/kindoffunny. What's that?
I'm just looking at the chat because I got a cold and someone was like, I'm crying tears for Babylon's Fall. Yes, I am.
Oh, yeah. Oh, you're not the only one. Yeah, I'm dude. I feel that. Babylon, it looks so good, Paris, at the reveal trailer. It looked fucking immaculate. And then, like, I think there was, like, one gameplay trailer after that that also looked really good. But then it appeared at, like, what was it? It must have been, fuck, who publishes Babylon's Fall? It must be Square Enix. Chat, correct me if I'm wrong. I think it was Square Enix that published it. It was at their E3 thing, and it showed up, and it just did not look as good. It was during that weird E3 press conference, too, where it was Final Fantasy Origin, and it was Guardians of the Galaxy, and none of the showings looked great. You know, thankfully, Guardians came out and was way better than people expected, but it was one of those ones where everybody was like, what the fuck did we all just watch together? Was that a weird press conference? And yeah, it was a weird press conference. But we'll see. Who knows? Again, maybe it comes out. Maybe it's Guardians of the Galaxy. It won't be. But hey, a man can dream.
Yeah.
Remember, this has been Kinda Funny Games Daily. Each and every weekday live right here on twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames. We run you through the nerdy news you need to know about. We have a Patreon post show for those that are subbed at the silver level of patreon.com/kindoffunnygames. So stick around for that. Otherwise, until next time, Game Daily.